You're listening to Country Life with Keith Fahey on Galway Bay FM.
Good evening, I'm Keith Fahey and welcome to this week's edition of Country Life. On the show this week, we're delighted to have Sinead Devaney, who works with the Chagas Water ASAP programme. We'll discuss water quality and issues relating to that. We'll also have Declan from Green Energy, Natural Green Energy, in relation to wood pellet heating and renewable energies. And we'll also have Rebecca Tierney there in relation to the Chagas Hinlayer Conference as well. So Rebecca's going to give us information about the hinlaying industry, what's involved, diets of hens and the production cycle of that as well. So we're delighted to have those. So Sinead Devaney from Chagas, Declan from Green Energy and Rebecca Tierney from the Layer Conference there in relation to Chagas. So we'd like to thank you all for listening. And as always, if you had any queries there, if you'd like any topics covered, please don't hesitate to give me an email at countrylife@galwaybayfm.ie. That's countrylife@galwaybayfm.ie. A couple of emails there and queries in relation to farmers worried about the National Fertiliser Database. So as of last year there, the third quarter or fourth quarter of last year, all farmers had to register with the National Fertiliser Database. So I suppose some of you might ask, what is the National Fertiliser Database? So it basically is information in relation to when farmers purchase their fertilisers from their co-ops or merchants or whoever they may buy it from. They now have to give their herd number when they buy the fertiliser. So every tonne of manure that's sold in the Republic can now be traced back from the company to the farm. So some issues maybe in relation to this, and some of the queries or worries some of farmers may have is in relation to what fertilisers can actually farmers purchase. So there's obviously there's the nitrates and phosphorus regulations there, which are very important, and obviously farmers can get serious penalties there in relation to if they exceed the nitrates and the phosphorus limits. So in most cases, from what we can see on a daily basis, is the phosphorus is actually probably more likely to hit farmers in relation to penalty than the actual nitrates, because this a lot of farmers probably, if they don't have valid soil samples, they need to get them. It's very important that you have them, a set of samples every 4 to 5 years. And why is this, you may ask? For a number of different reasons as well. To ensure that you're buying the correct fertilizer and you're spreading the correct rate as well. So, for example, fields very high in P and low in K, or vice versa, you obviously need to maybe change your fertilizer plan there in relation to those. As you're, if you're putting out a high amount of K on index 3 or 4 soils, it is a waste. So, which in relation the nitrogen, it's probably less likely to farmers exceed this than the phosphorus. So, for example, if farmers there have all of their farm soil sampled and almost all the samples are index 3 or 4, they may have a little or no allowance at all for P. So, what is P? P is the phosphorus, or the second number when you buy your fertilizer. So, for example, 18612, the 6 there is the phosphorus. So, a lot of farmers there may have little or no allowance. And I suppose the only real way you can actually find out how much fertilizer you can spread is by doing an NMP, so a nutrient management plan. So what does this entail? It entails a number of different actions that you must do. You must soil sample the whole farm, list the amount of stock you have, the amount of slurry you produce, we'd say, and the amount of fertilizer you buy, and the amount of meal you feed. So there's approximately 5 kilos of phosphorus in every ton of meal fed. So for farmers that are maybe feeding a lot of meal, they might have a lot lower allowance for spreading pea than a farmer that mightn't be feeding much meal at all. That is because a lot of the pea would be going into the slurry, so their slurry would be a lot higher in phosphorus than a normal slurry would be. So they may have a lot lower allowance than pea. So it's vital that farmers have soil samples and that they look at them very closely. If farmers are very high there in the index indexes for pea, a fertilizer like maybe 20015 or 19015 may be applicable there for silage ground or grazing ground as well. Or I would say if farmers are spreading silage there or on silage ground, it may be, you know, going with the likes of your urea or your protected urea. There's a very good product there, Gen 38 plus 7% sulfur. So for all silage crops, it's very important that the silage crop achieves or receives 14 to 15 units of sulfur there. So sulfur is very important for nitrogen use efficiency. So the way the plant takes up nitrogen, sulfur is very important. And from what I see, a lot of farmers maybe, from talking to a lot of farmers, sulfur it's probably not been spread enough, and it can be clearly seen in research, and yields have shown that there's a massive response there to the sulphur as well. So look, fertilizer is about 500 a ton there in relation to urea, or 18610 or 18612 and 101020 are in around that, anywhere from 480 to 520 depending on the amount purchased in that. So it's very important that we're spreading it at the correct rate as well. So maybe the Gen 38 there with 7% sulphur could be spread at maybe a bag and a half or bag and three quarters, along with maybe 2.5 to 3,000 gallons of slurry. Now, care must also be taken if spreading slurry through the dribble bar, the splash plate indeed, at the minute. If you plan on cutting in 6 or 7 weeks' time, there's a fair chance that that slurry will still be on the grass. So very important there that farmers realise that as well. There was research done, or read an article recently whereby myotoxins were found in bulk tanks, whereby a farmer couldn't understand what was happening, but they seem to think now that the reason for it was that there was a slight bit of slurry left on the grass, and the cows ingested this then, and it was actually they obviously it's all tested in the milk. So milk is tested for a number of different things, for phosphorus, or it's tested for cell count, urea, your fat and protein, and thermogenics in that as well. So all milk is tested there as well, and anything that wouldn't be deemed fit for human consumption would have to be dumped, and the farmer would receive no payment for that. So that's very important as well. So look, just reminding farmers there, firstly, to register with the fertiliser database, look at your P allowance, look at your nitrogen allowance, maybe if you can do an NMP, it's very important as well. And also as well, we've got a few questions there. A lot of farmers maybe only getting cattle out this week, wondering what to do in relation to silage. Do they, you know, there's a lot of grass there and might be grown all winter. So what do you do? Do you go out and graze very heavy covers, or are you fertilising it for silage cut? In a lot of cases, and it, obviously it'll be all farm specific, but in some cases we see what some farmers are doing is they're almost cutting it now, or maybe in the next couple of weeks, or maybe giving it a small bit of fertiliser and maybe cutting in 3 to 4 weeks or very early May, and starting again. So basically they can spread their slurry then on top of that. There's a lot of tanks full throughout the country, county, and indeed the country as well. So in some cases it might suit farmers maybe in some fields maybe to cut them very early this year as opposed to other years, and try and get that maybe prevent any dead material growing any further as well, because silage is extremely expensive to make as well at the minute. So just some information in relation to that. So looking at some market reports, looking at the Loughrea Mart report, the sheep sale, another small sale is expected with the hogged numbers drying up, and spring lambs just starting to come out. Spring lamb numbers are increasing week on week with high demand for them, prices exceeding €5 per kilo on a number of occasions. Factory agents and wholesalers are very eager for lambs and hoggets. Spring lambs at 39 kilo selling for 206, 39.3 kilo selling for 214, 41.7 kilo selling for 214, 50 kilos at 235, hoggets at 43.5 kilo selling for 193, at 45.7 7 kilos selling for 202, Colios at 85 kilos selling for 175, at 88 kilos selling for 170, another 88 kilos selling for 200. Sheep sale every Thursday at 10:30 a.m. Looking at the cattle there in Loughrea, cattle sale, large entry of cattle met with the hot trade for all types. The 7 month farmers were out an extremely active ringside against export and feedlot agents. Cull cows averaging from 2 to 220 a kilo, with mostly store cows on offer. Herve were born 2019, 495 kilos selling for 990 or €2 a kilo. Cemental 2019 born at 520 kilos selling for 1,060. A Friesian 2015 born at 710 kilos selling for 1390. There was a small selection of suckler cows also, with prices for in-calf cows making up to 1640 and cows with calves at foot to €1,920. Weaning numbers were strong with the high demand there creating 100% clearance. Heifers met up to 358 a kilo and bulls met up to 384 a kilo. Heifers at Limousine at 250 kilos selling for 850. 255 kilos selling for 860 or 337 a kilo. Charlie at 300 kilos selling for 950 or 319 a kilo. Looking at two Charlie bulls there, 260 kilos selling for 950. There was a super entry of maiden heifers met with the sizzling trade here. Prices reaching to 429 per kilo. Five limousines at 322 kilos selling for 1380. A limousine at 380 kilos selling for 1390. The bullock trade was dictated by the grass buyers in particular, with prices reaching to 368 per kilo. Limousine at 435 kilos selling for 1600. Another limousine at 470 kilos selling for 1600 also. Another limousine at 515 kilos selling for 1670 or 324 a kilo. Cattle sales every Saturday at 10:30 a.m. Organic sale this Saturday in conjunction with the general cattle sales, and bookings can be got at 091 0818-841219. That's 091-841219. So that's the Loughrea Mart. Oh, looking at the Mount Bellew cattle report there. One Charlie Store heifer at 625 kilos, selling for 1820. One Hereford Bullock at 220 kilos, selling for 490. Sale in person and online with the Mart Eye begins at 6 p.m. Gates at 4 p.m. Ring display includes the ICBF star rating. So that's on Fridays there. Mount Bellew Mart sheep sale on Saturdays. On Saturday gone by, the 20th of April, sale similar in previous numbers in previous week, and more lambs, spring lambs and stag yos on offer. Good number of yos with lambs at foot. Very good trade for all around for everything. Sample prices for spring lambs included 11 lambs at 47 kilos selling for 223, 5 lambs at 44 kilos selling for 194, 1 lamb at 59 kilos selling for 227, 5 lambs at 50 kilos selling for 230 euro. Hoggets, 4 yo hoggets at 62 kilos selling for 245. Looking at some stag yos, 2 yos at 93 kilos selling for 208 euro, 71 kilos selling for 150, and 9 yos at 87 kilos selling for 214. Yos with lambs at foot included 5 second crop yos and 5 lambs at 280 euro, 4 second crop yos and 4 lambs at selling for 274, 1 aged yo and 1 lamb selling for 180, 4 yearlings and 4 lambs at 280, 1 second crop yo and 2 lambs, 300 euro. Sheep sale every Saturday at 10 a.m. Cattle sales every Friday at 6 p.m. Shearfest 2024 also. Information at that can be got at www.shearfest.ie. So that is the report there sent in to us from Mount Bellew. Looking at the Tuam Mart report from yesterday, a vibrant trade at Tuam Mart on Monday, the 22nd of April, yesterday gone by. Sample cow prices included a 570 kilo Aberdeen Angus selling for 1380 or 242 a kilo, a 642 kilo Simmental cross making 1550 or 241 a kilo, and a 680 kilo Limousine cross making 1760 or 259 a kilo. Looking at some sample heifer prices included a 480 kilo Aberdeen Angus selling for 1570 or 327 a kilo, a 620 kilo Charlie cross making 1980 or 319 a kilo, and a 245 kilo Albrecht cross selling for 830 or 339 a kilo. Sample bullock prices included a 525 kilo Limousine selling for 1790, a 480 kilo Solaire cross selling for 1650, a 247 kilo Solaire cross selling for 900, a 280 kilo Charlie cross selling for 980. Next Monday, the 29th, we'll see the evening weaning sale at 5:30, and booking and inquiries can be got at 093-24353. That's 093-24353. So that's the Tuam Mart report. So first up on Country Life this evening, we're delighted with Declan from Natural Green Energy in Crowhill. Declan, you're very welcome on to Country Life. I suppose something different we're covering this week, maybe a little bit on natural and renewable energy, I suppose, and you seem to tick a lot of those boxes, I suppose. Can you tell us maybe firstly how it started, how the company started, and maybe where you're located?
Thanks, Keith. Yes, we're located in Crowhill. We've been in business now just over 20 years. And we do a really wide range of products. We'll say from wood pellet stoves, boilers, oil and gas boiler upgrades, plumbing and heating, electric fires for new homes, air-to-water heat pumps, etc. So we try to cover all bases.
Okay, very good. Can you tell us maybe a little bit about the concept of wood pellet stoves?
Yeah, so I get they've been around a very, very long time. Extra Flame is the brand that we do. And as I say, we've been doing those now for 19 years. And they really took off. They started taking off around 2006, 2007, when they started to come onto the market in a big way. And we're very, very lucky as well, I suppose, in that we have three Irish manufacturers of wood pellets in Ireland. And that has helped a lot as well to boost the market. And it is renewable energy, so the fuel itself is very reasonably priced. I mean, you can run your stove for 8 hours a day for as little as €2.50. They're also very handy from a point of view of that you only have to give them a clean out maybe once a week. They only have 1% ash content, and even the bit of ash that it does produce is pure potash. You can just throw it out in your raised beds or on your lawn or whatever's handy for you. And in the also, you've weekly timers built in along with app control, and it's thermostatically controlled. So you can literally have it on in the morning before you get up for work. And again, it can be off during the day and on again before you get home from work in the evening. So it's a lifestyle choice as much as anything else. But it's really easy to use. You just press a button to turn it on. And that's why people are kind of going for, you know, yourself, with everybody being busy now, it's not always possible to be able to spend the time in the bog or otherwise cutting timber. So the wood pellet offers an easy-to-use option in that regard.
Okay, and I suppose how is there so little ash, we'd say, with those compared to, we'd say, the timber or turf that would have been traditionally burned, we'd say?
It's the amount of fuel that's used really is so small. The concept of a pellet stove is, I suppose, really, if you ever take a stick from a campfire and you blow on it, it burns really, really hot. It starts to glow. And a pellet stove works on the very same principle. So you have a tiny amount of fuel, the little wooden pellets made from the sawdust. And there's a fan underneath them, and that's constantly blowing on those pellets, which maximizes the heat yield from them. So you can actually run your stove from as little as 0.5 of 1 kg of fuel per hour. And that then means that it equates to a very, very small ash content because you're using such little fuel to gain so much heat.
Okay, and I think for any of our farming people that are listening, not to mistake the wood pellets with beef nuts either. I think it may have happened in the past. To look at them, they look the exact same.
They do. I mean, it would make for an interesting smell in your living room for sure if you were to put them in by mistake. But we've had cat litter put in as well on a few occasions because it all looks so similar. But no, it is. The moisture content is probably the most important part of it. The pellets, they're reduced to like 5% moisture content, so very, very, very low content of moisture, and that allows them then to give a really high heat yield from the pellets.
Okay, and why do you think they're becoming more popular or that?
Again, as I was saying, I think it's the lifestyle choice. People are, you know, you might have, you know, both people in the household might be out working, and it's not always possible to be able to look at the other means of fuel. And if you have something literally that you can turn on from your phone on your way home from work, or if you can have it set on a timer, and as importantly then as well, it is thermostatically controlled. So you can set you have 5 different power settings on it. So you can actually set the power setting that you want. The stove will maintain the temperature in that space for you. So it's almost running it like a heat pump. So you'd be taking an older house, and what you're doing is you're creating controlled heat. So you can have a low heat over a long period of time. It's much better than short blasts of high heat.
Okay.
And that seems to be why people go for that.
Okay. And what other services or products do you offer?
So the PV is the other one that is very popular at the moment. It's the photovoltaic solar for electricity. And we also do solar for hot water. But it is becoming very, very popular now, just with the price of electricity increasing. And we recently installed it here now ourselves on our own premises. And I have to say, the performance of it is just outstanding, because you can see everything that it's doing. You can see your results straight away, and you can see it on your bills fairly immediately as well. So the payback is getting shorter and shorter now, especially since the government have taken the VAT off the cost of the installation, and also the electrical companies are paying back up on 24 and 26 cents a unit for a kilowatt hour of electricity that you're selling back to the grid. So that's becoming very, very popular then because of that as well. Also, electric fires, new houses, of course, they can't have chimneys anymore. And, you know, they don't need them because they have the air-to-water heat pumps, which we also do. And then you can have your electric fire in, well, I suppose what everybody's going for now is the idea of the media wall, where you have your media wall, you have your television above it, and you get the effect of a fire, which is very hard to get away from, because it's what it's used to, or what we're used to, shall I say. And when you look out the window in the depths of winter, it's just nice to have something glowing, which is there. So they've become very, very popular also. And we've just finished building a new showroom in Crowell, which has a lot of those on display as well.
Okay, very good. And just in relation to, maybe to go back, maybe you might tell us a little bit about the difference between back boilers and non-back boilers. We'll say if you may have two different potential customers, one looking to heat a room and maybe the other looking to heat a house, and maybe how they work and maybe the difference required for those.
Yeah, so the room heat is still the most popular, I suppose, because it's the most affordable, number one. We've just released a new stove, a new wood pellet stove, which we had part in designing ourselves. Going through after 3 years now of design. It's a little traditional wood pellet stove, the smallest in Europe, so we're really, really proud of it. And it can heat about 150 cubic metres. So your average size kitchen, living room space, all open plan, it can heat all that for you comfortably. If you want to go that step further, you can go for the stove with the back boiler in it. And we have them in various different sizes. So you can literally have them from 12 kilowatts right up to 30 kilowatts. So they can heat up to 25 radiators for you and your water, of course. They are a bit more expensive to run, but it's all relative. You're doing an awful lot more with them. You're heating a much larger space. And it's very much a go-to where we're finding with customers who have been looking at possibly the idea of doing the deep retrofit. And I know it's a contentious argument, but the if you're going for an air-to-water heat pump and you're doing your insulation and all of that, it can be very, very expensive. And customers are coming in saying they've been given quotations of anywhere between 70 and 150,000 euros. And it's not always attainable. Whereas with a wood pellet stove with the back boiler, you can leave everything as is, put in your wood pellet stove with your back boiler, and then do all of the other things in time as they're affordable. And it's just a different tack of bringing your house up to a higher efficiency level without having to remortgage in order to do it, you know.
Okay, very good. So you see a lot of them maybe going into older houses at the moment as well, probably.
Yes, exactly. I mean, newer houses, it's the heat pump. That's what's going into them all now. So it's very much for the older houses. Now, some newer houses are putting in the space heaters, all right, just for room heat only, because it's nice to have that little bit of a backup there and a direct source of heat in the space. But for the older houses, the boiler ones, definitely they're very popular. People are pulling out the solid fuel stoves with the back boilers and going for the pellet option. I think it's just for the easier lifestyle as much as anything else. The running cost is cheaper than what they're used to, so it is a win-win. You have an initial investment, of course, but once you get past that, the benefits really outweigh.
Yes, well, a lot less cleaning as well, probably, and taking out ashes, whereas maybe it would have been a daily task in relation to a solid fuel stove.
Very much so, a daily task. And then it's even, what do you do with all the ash that you're producing from it, particularly if you live in a town or if you're not out in the countryside where you can just throw it, say out on your lawn if it's wood ash or whatever, and you have to dispose of it otherwise if the likes of the turf ash. But once a week generally is what's recommended to clean out a wood pellet stove. And even at that, it's very, very small, the amount of ash that's in it. So from that point of view, it's a great product.
Okay, very good, very good. And how can people get more information from your site?
So they can go to our website, which is www.naturalgreenenergy.ie. And we have two showrooms in Crotwell. One of them just newly opened with all the electric fires on display, and the other is full of the wood pellet stoves and wood burners. And that's on Main Street in Crotwell, right in the middle of the village. Or they can give us a buzz as well, just on 091-876-816.
Very good. So Declan from Natural Green Energy there in Crotwell in relation to renewable energy, PV, solar PV and wood pellet stoves. So thanks very much, Declan, for coming on Country Life.
Thank you, Keith. Appreciate it.
So you're welcome back after the break. We're delighted with Sinead Devaney from Chagas, who works in the ASSA programme. You're very welcome on to Country Life, Sinead. I suppose, firstly, what is the ASSA programme for maybe some of our listeners who might be unfamiliar with it or unaware of it? And maybe what is your role within the programme?
Thank you, Keith. I'm delighted to be on your programme. The ASSA program, well, ASSA stands for Agricultural Sustainability Support and Advisory Program. And I'm an ASSA advisor, and I'm the ASSA advisor for County Galway. And there are ASSA advisors all around the country, and some are in Chagas and some are with the co-ops. So the program is a government industry collaboration, and it provides a free and confidential advisory service to farmers. And the aim of the ASSA program is to provide the farmers with advice focused on preventing contaminant losses to water. And that's with a view to attaining the Water Framework Directive water quality targets, to meet with those. And the service is, as I said, is provided by Chagas and the dairy co-ops.
Okay.
And that's available around the country, yeah.
I suppose maybe a very silly question, but I suppose there's a lot of different answers maybe to it. Why is water quality important, Sinead?
Well, water quality is important, I suppose, for all of us. It's very important that we have good drinking water supply, that we meet with European standards and EPA standards for water quality, so that we can be assured that we're drinking safe water, that we're not going to be sick, that it's safe for bathing in, for washing, that it's of good status for aquatic life as well, and all the biodiversity that depends on it then as well. So it is a greater, you know, it's for man and beast and biodiversity, you know, there's numerous reasons, I suppose, why we should have good water quality.
And I suppose, what are farmers doing maybe, Sinead, to help improve quality? You know, a lot of the time farmers maybe can get blamed for maybe water quality and that, but there is an awful effort made by farmers, especially in the last number of years, in relation to many different actions that they're doing in relation to improving water quality.
Yes, Keith. I suppose down through the years, the farmers have been involved in various schemes, like from REPS to AOS to GLOS, now to ACRES schemes, where they are putting measures in place that will help improve water quality. And that might be planting hedges near watercourses or groups of trees, are putting in riparian zones and fencing watercourses, closing off drinking points that would have been there in the past, and not allowing stock to drink from the watercourses. All of these different measures, as well as putting in good buffers in place where they don't spread fertilizers or organic manures close to water bodies and drains on their farm. So all of that will help to improve water quality on each farm.
Okay, very good. And there's a new AIP scheme out at the minute. You might tell us maybe a little bit about this in relation to water quality and that, and maybe who can avail of it.
Yeah, so it's a Farming for Water scheme, Farming for Water European Innovation Partnership. And that is a scheme for farmers in certain priority areas of action. So there are 11 of these around County Galway, focused specifically on certain water bodies. And there are some in Connemara and then some in East Galway as well. So we have, say, the Suck, the Castlegar River, St. Clarence Stream, Ballinure. In West Galway then we have Dowris, Recess, Filemore, Cashla and Owen Riff. And some of your listeners may be familiar, you know, they are with those water bodies. And if they're farming in the catchment areas of these, and if they have been visited maybe by an ASIP advisor in the past few years, then they could be eligible for applying for the EIP. And what the EIP is it's a targeted program for the farmers in these areas to help them to put measures in place that will help improve water quality in those particular streams. So, for example, again, they might be fencing the watercourses, closing off drinking points and putting in maybe solar pumps that would help to extract the water out for drinking. They can look at establishing hedgerow as well on slopes and putting in, doing tree planting. Similar enough measures to the ACRES scheme, Keith, but they would have been contacted or visited by an ASIP advisor in the past and their farm would be assessed. So these farmers can expect, I suppose, to be getting, to be contacted, you know, in the coming weeks and months, where they can look to apply to this program and put in a free application to put the measures on their farms, and they can get paid then for carrying out those measures. So it will involve some discussion between myself and the farmer to see what is appropriate and what measures will work for their farm and the watercourse or the water body in their area.
Okay, and maybe in relation to farmyards, how can farmers reduce runoff in farmyards? Maybe you mentioned earlier about riparian zones in relation to rivers, yeah, and that, and sowing hedges. Can similar be done around farmyards?
Yes, they can. They can sow hedges as well, close to the farmyard, to prevent, to slow down, I suppose, the movement of nitrate and phosphorus. And the other point, I suppose, which is good on farms, is to look initially at keeping clean water and soiled water separate from each other. So we have clean water, rainwater falling on our roofs of the farm buildings, onto clean yards, maybe non-livestock yards, and if that water could be diverted out the field to, it's clean and kept away from soiled water, then the soiled waters can be collected and diverted into tanks for storage, and there's a reduced amount of soiled water then when, you know, it's not mixed with by rainwater, and which would only, I suppose, exacerbate the soiled water problem.
Okay, yeah. Very good. And maybe in relation to spreading fertilisers, you know, obviously we've seen a very wet spring and winter and even autumn and summer last year. I suppose spreading fertilisers, and maybe the correct fertiliser as well, at the right rate and at the right time, is vitally important as well in relation to water quality.
It is, Keith. And I suppose when farmers are spreading, say, their nitrogen fertilisers, it's important to do that when land is trafficable and when there's good soil temperatures, like above 6 degrees and rising early in the year, when it's when grass is actively growing and you have nice warm temperatures and no heavy rainfall is forecast. So that would be a good point. Also, farmers could use low-emission slurry spreading technology, and when they do apply their slurry, they can adjust down their chemical nitrogen that they put out, then their bag fertilizer nitrogen, to take account of the nitrogen that is there in their organic manures, and follow their fertilizer plan so that they're not over-applying nutrients that they don't need, and that they're applying the nutrients where they're most needed. So that all helps, I suppose, with you know, not applying again when heavy rainfall is forecast, or on saturated soils, or again in drought conditions where you have, you know, reduced grass growth. All of these can help to I suppose, spread fertilizer in a timely fashion, and to be wary of buffer zones and spreading dates as well, not to spread in the band periods, and to keep back the appropriate distances for fertilisers and slurries.
Okay.
From water bodies. Yeah.
Very good advice there, Sinead. And maybe just in relation to the programme, the ASIP programme, maybe how can people find out more about it? Have you a website, or can they visit the Chagas site, or what's the story there?
Yes, they can visit the Chagas website. We have leaflets and they're on the website about farming for water quality, which go into a lot more detail on the ASIP program. I can be contacted at Chagas Ballinasloe on 09096 42456 as well, or contact any Chagas office and they can be put in contact with myself for more information pertinent to County Galway. And I can answer any questions then they may have. Yeah.
Very good. Sinead Devaney there from the Chagas ASIP programme. Thanks very much for coming on Country Life. Great to talk to you. So next up on Country Life, we're delighted to have Rebecca Tierney, a poultry advisor with Chagas. You might tell us maybe firstly a little bit about your role with Chagas and the conference you have organised coming up this Thursday.
Hiya, Keith. Thanks for having me. Yeah, so my role is a poultry advisor within Chagas, the only one unfortunately at the moment. But within that, I'd be engaging with smaller producers right up to the larger commercial producers for eggs and broilers, primarily a small bit with ducks and turkeys as well. We'd be having some discussion groups, events like we're having on Thursday evening, and just general guidance on maybe setting up a new enterprise. Or maybe around planning permissions or environmental issues, your TAMS grants and bits and pieces like that.
Okay, very good.
So the conference then that we're having is for the layer industry, so it's aimed at the egg sector. We have 5 speakers lined up on a number of different topics, from health. We have 2 vets speaking on the night about different issues. And we have a Chagas colleague of our own, Kevin O'Connell, speaking in relation to agroforestry and the grants that's available and the benefits that can bring to a poultry enterprise, both in terms of carbon capture, but also encouraging the birds to range on those free-range type systems. And we also have Stephen Turner is travelling from the UK to join us, who will speak around getting the bird ready to start producing eggs, and bring her into production without any stress. And Jim Uprichter then from Trial Nutrition is going to look at the topic of sustainability and carbon footprinting. something that we're all hearing a lot more about. So this to give the producers a chance to get an understanding of what it means for their farm, how they can collect the data, and how they can get their own carbon footprint figure to be able to work and reduce that figure going forward.
Okay, very good, very good. You might just tell us the details of the time and place it's on again, just for anyone that may have missed it.
Yeah, so it's taking place in the Errigal Country House Hotel in Cootale and Cavan, starting from 7 p.m. On Thursday the 25th of April. So this coming Thursday, from 7 to 10, we'll have a host of exhibitors there as well, from some banks to equipment suppliers to solar suppliers. There's a range of people exhibiting there. So a great chance to network and catch up and have a positive vibe around the industry. It's always a great chance to meet fellow producers and those maybe wishing to enter the industry as well. It's an excellent opportunity.
Okay, very good. And you might tell us maybe a little bit about the laying industry in Ireland. Maybe where is the majority of it, we'd say. And I know around Galway, we haven't really, it's not, we'd say, a massive industry. But in other parts of the country, up around Monaghan and places, it seems to be way more in clusters, if that's fair to say.
Yeah, that's absolutely spot on, Keith. We definitely in Cavan, Monaghan, it would be the kind of poultry capital of Ireland, as it were. And particularly for layers. With the broiler sector, it's a little bit more spread out in that there's some down in Cork and Limerick also, but very much for the layers. About 75% of our layer farms are actually in Cavan and Monaghan. So the 80% of our eggs are produced under the Bord Bia logo, with some smaller egg packers selling locally without the Bord Bia logo. They can work away without that as they have the local story to tell. So there is some smaller companies over into the west of Ireland, around Mayo and Galway and places like that, but the vast bulk of them would be in the east of the country. The laying sector works in that all our laying birds are imported as day-old chicks, so they come as their nice little fluffy yellow chick and are placed on a pullet rearing farm. So that's the point where they're taken from day-old right up to the age of 16 weeks. And at that point, then, they're transferred to the egg production house. And they'll be go through a process called lighting up to mimic springtime going into summer, where the days get longer, days get brighter. And that brings on the reproductive cycle, develops the reproductive system, and the eggs begin to come at that stage. So the birds will lay their eggs. They lay maybe 6-7 eggs in every 10. They lay in a cluster, take a break of a day and start again. So definitely Cavan Monaghan is the vast bulk of them. And there were quite a number of our eggs coming from free range farms. We have a market destined for brown, large eggs, but we do have good small, medium and extra large eggs, you know. So to encourage people to buy the other sizes, you know, it creates more value on the product if we buy mixed size packs or even the mediums or smalls, if you can at all.
And why is there a difference in egg size, Rebecca?
It's just naturally, as the bird weight and egg weight are directly correlated. The bigger the bird is, the bigger the egg will be. So similar to if we take a heifer, her first calf might be slightly smaller to a second calf and cow. And so the produce of that hen, as she gets bigger, she will lay a bigger egg. But we can also control it with the diet. So some of the amino acids in the diet can help to increase and control the egg size, because we don't want to get to the point where the egg is too large, because that can be quite difficult for the hen. So we try and control it that they're laying a good size egg that can mean they can have a good long life.
Okay.
And a good long laying cycle.
Okay, very interesting. In relation to breeds, what would be the most common types of breeds, we'd say, within the industry in Ireland?
So here in Ireland and across the world, there's really only two genetics companies that have control over the commercial laying sector, and they would be hybrid type birds, so crossbreds. They wouldn't be purebreds. So you'd often hear people referring to the Rhode Island Reds. They're almost like a hybrid of a Rhode Island Red. The most common here in Ireland would be a Lohmann Brown or a Highline Brown. They would be two very popular breeds. that will be used, but particularly the Lohmann brown. So they're bred for their ability to lay, their docility, their feed consumption, and just their general efficiency and good health. So they're a good bird for the industry. And as I said, they're owned by two companies, really, one of which will be speaking at the event on Thursday.
Okay. And what is the diet? What's the main constituent of a diet for a laying bird?
So depending on the age of the bird, if we look at a point of lay pullet that's coming into the production house, they will receive a pre-lay diet. So a diet to prepare them for that process of going into a reproductive cycle. So we give additional calcium in that diet, and that's really important to build up the calcium reserves in their skeleton, particularly in a bone called the medullary bone. And that bone then can release calcium as the bird goes through her life to ensure that the eggshell is coated quite well, and that's what gives our eggs the quality and strength of the shell, and the colour indeed as well. So then as they move into, we have stage one, stage two and stage three diets to match the requirements of the birds throughout their life. So energy is obviously very important at that point in the stage one diet, because they're still growing and they haven't just fully reached their end life weight, and they need energy to go into that life cycle, and they've changed housing and things like that, so to help with all of that transition. Then as they get on in life, we again, the calcium will have been reduced in stage one, but as they reach the stage three stage of life, we will increase the calcium again to help coat that eggshell to ensure that we have quality eggs going on the shelf. Because if they don't meet that standard, they are called Class B eggs, which won't make sale on the shop shelf.
Okay, and just maybe in relation to the amount of, how many eggs would you expect, or what would be the target there for maybe a hen to lay in her lifetime, and maybe at what age do they stop laying, or in terms of the industry standards there?
So in terms of our industry standards here in Ireland, hens would be laying until they're 78 to 80 weeks of age, and in that period we would expect them to lay approximately 346 eggs, which is about between 28 and 29 dozen of eggs is what the bird will produce.
Okay, right. And when they're grading the eggs then, what are the eggs graded for?
So they're graded according to their class. So we have Class A and Class B. Class A egg is what you will buy when you go into your local supermarket or farmer's market and purchase. They're lovely and brown, perfectly shaped, and doesn't seem to be any kind of flaws on the eggshell itself, and internally perfect as well. Class B eggs then, maybe something that has a wee bit of dirt, a little crack that the hen has repaired herself, and there could be things like toe pecks where the hen may have stepped on it and caused a little crack. Those are Class B eggs. They are perfectly good to eat, but they don't meet the consumer perception of a perfect egg. So they will go for the breaking industry. So they'd be used in our mayonnaises, our bacon industries and things like that as well. Perfectly healthy. They've been sent for other egg separated products. So you may see on the shop shelf just one example of liquid egg, whether it be liquid whites, liquid yolks, and then powdered eggs for sports enthusiasts or gym goers. And then the likes of pancake juice and things like that, we see mixes made up. That have just the yolks or the whites of the eggs made up. So there is a market for them as well, but they definitely are at a lower price. They would achieve a much lower price than that of the Class A egg.
Okay, very good, very interesting there. I think there's a lot of people that pick up eggs in the supermarket and maybe unfamiliar of the industry itself and the breeds and all that goes into it. You might just give us the details of the conference again, and maybe if people are interested in finding out more about the laying sector, maybe how might they get information via the website?
Yeah, so the conference again taking place on Thursday the 25th from 7 p.m. But doors will be open from 6 if people want to come along and have a chat with myself or fellow producers or potentially the exhibitors present. So at the Errigal House Hotel, the Errigal Country House Hotel in Coot Hill in Cavan, we'll be there from 7 to 10. There'll be light refreshments on the night and a brilliant lineup of speakers. If anyone would like more information on the layer industry as a whole, they are more than welcome to contact myself. My details are on the Chagas website under the Ballyhays office, or you can just look up Chagas Poultry. We have some pre-recorded webinars there, some information leaflets and some newsletters there. They can also sign up to our e-newsletter that was there on the website.
Very good. Thanks very much, Rebecca Tierney there, Chagas Poultry Advisor there on the new Layer Conference that's coming on Thursday. And so we wish you all the best luck. I'm sure you've put a lot of hard work and effort into that. So thanks very much as well for coming on Country Life there. A lot of very interesting facts and figures and numbers there in relation to the laying sector. So thanks very much, Rebecca.
Thanks a million, Keith. Appreciate it.
So that's it this week from Country Life. From me, Keith Fahey, and all here in Galway Bay FM, we'd like to thank you for listening. And we'd also like to thank our speaker, Sinead Devaney, there from the Chagas ASAP Water Quality Programme. We'd also like to thank Declan from the Natural Green Energy there in Crowhall for the wood pellet heating and wood pellet stoves and that, and the renewable PV solar panels as well. And we'd also like to thank Rebecca Tierney from Chagas on the new Layer Conference that's happening this Thursday in Errigal House, 7 to 10 p.m. And more information can be got there in relation to that in the Chagas website. So we'd like to thank you all, our listeners, for tuning in this evening. And so until next Tuesday evening at 7 p.m. We hope you have a lovely evening, and next up is Melodies followed by the Nightfly.